What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and prolific musician. He has tons of credits as a music composer for various national TV theme and music commercials, ranging from VH1 to MTV, and other various national projects, serving as music producer and recording engineer. Please welcome Grammy Award-winning music producer, composer, and recording engineer, Steve Peschel. How's it going, Steve?
I'm all right, thank you. How about you?
Oh, pretty good, man. Thanks for taking your time and calling in and chopping it up with me, man. I love talking to other great musicians and recording engineers, man, so I had to jump on it.
Yes, thank you very much. Thanks for the invite.
Man, Steve, you know, I'm looking at your resume, man, and the list just goes on and on, from your TV theme commercials, you serving as music producer with various clients, and also a recording engineer, man. You have an extensive background as a recording engineer. You know, when did this all start for you as a full-time music position? I mean, when did this become a full-time gig for you?
It started in 98 when I got signed to one of Puffy's hitman producers. His name is Ron Lawrence. He took me under his wing, and from there, you know, that's how everything started. You know, just by being around him, I learned how to put a record together. Because it's one thing knowing how to make music, but it's another thing how to make a track and make it sound like it's ready for radio. You know, having your snares sounding tight, your kicks sounding tight as well, you know, it's a whole different ball game. So that's when it all started.
It's funny, man, you brought that up. You know, I'm a huge fan of and a believer in making your track sound right sonically. It has to be the right snare, it has to be the right kick, and it just has to sound, you know, good across the spectrum of the choices of sounds that you use. And that's really when the production starts. You know, melodically it may be a great tune, but, you know, is it the right sounds for that particular track? And, you know, building that ear as a seasoned musician, I mean, that definitely helps along the way.
Yeah. Yep, it does. It does. You know, there's a science behind putting all the sounds together. Because sometimes you might think a sound might go with a track, and then once you start adding other tracks, you might feel like the bass sound is not really... You know, it's not meshing with the other sounds, you know?
Right.
So, you got to study sounds as well.
You do. I was going to ask you, Steve. I mean, there's a lot of different formulas that, you know, I think as a producer, me primarily, I'm a keyboardist, man, so I'm really heavy into my patches in my library and making sure my library is tight. Now, what's some of the things that you've done on some of your projects to really go through your library and kind of categorize your sounds, that are usable sounds? I mean, we have 10,000 plus sounds in our rig sometimes, man, but all of those 10,000 sounds may not be usable, man. So what are some of the things that you've done that you felt that, man, I know this is going to be something solid I can also track with on a later song? I mean, what are some of the things that you do to categorize your sounds?
Well, what I do, the main keyboard I use is the Motif ES8. Mm. I've been using this since 2004. You know, I'm endorsed by Yamaha, so they gave me a keyboard, you know, the big one.
Yeah.
And all the sounds that I love, I kind of save them in a patch. So anytime I'm ready to make a track, I'll have all my sounds saved. It saves me a lot of time as well. So, and with Yamaha, their sounds are very realistic. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So whenever you make a track, it will, even though it could be sequenced, but it will sound live, because that's how their sounds are, you know, are designed.
They are. Yamaha, to me, to my opinion, I think they really have one of the best pianos out there, acoustic pianos.
Yeah.
Their rolls are pretty decent, and, you know, just the overall all-in-one box, I really think, coming into the game, you can grab yourself a Yamaha rack and just really take you to another level creatively. You know, I own the Motif rack. I've owned it for years, and I also own the Motif ES rack, and I love both of those racks, man. They sound great. Not much EQing or processing I have to do to them, surprisingly, man. I mean, I could just patch that in, man, and it just sounds great the way it is, you know? So, yeah, hats off to Yamaha.
Yeah, I know. That's a good, like you said, you don't need too much EQ, because it seems like they EQ'd all the sounds. You know?
Definitely.
Yep.
Now, Steve, man, I got to ask, man, who are some of your musical influences, man? Because you have such a diverse background. Being a flute player. No, seriously, man, being a flute player and also having the ear for recording engineering and production that way you do. And it's like, man, there's just a whole conglomerate of diversity in your style, man. I got to take my hats off to you on that one, dude.
Oh, thank you very much. Some of my influences are Miles Davis, Herbie Hancock, John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, Beethoven, Mozart, a lot of different, George Benson, you know, who else? Quincy Jones. You know, what happened is how it all started growing up. My dad, we used to always play music in the house because my dad's a musician. And everything he would listen, he would have me in the living room, you know, and just listen to the same records he was listening to. So that's how I got into the whole jazz movement. And he would play also a lot of Latin music.
Yeah.
You know, like Antonio Carlos Jobim, you know, learning all those Brazilian songs. So that's how I got into the music. You understand? And all the different sounds kind of mesh, you know, into one, like a fusion. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So that's how my ears got tuned to the virus, to different sounds and different genre of music.
You know, that's where it's at, I think, Steve. You know, I feel that any musician that wants to, you know, expand their palette, you know, in styles of music, man, we got to branch out from our personal favorites.
Yeah.
I feel that, you know, you may not be a fan of other music genres out there, but there's something within that style that I feel that you'll be able to add to your arsenal as any player, whether it's a piano player, flute player, guitarist, bass guitarist, drumming especially. I mean,
yeah.
You know, being a drummer, you definitely got to be well-versed just because of different rhythms and timing that's involved in each style. So, I mean, so definitely got to keep your ears open to everything that's out there.
Yeah, and it helps also when you're making tracks. You know, you can take some of your influences from the Latin world and put them into your hip-hop tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes a whole difference. You know, it makes a difference when other people are listening to your sound. They're like, wow, it's hip-hop, but there's something that you added that makes it very different. You know, that's what I like doing with my tracks.
You know, if you had to define your personal style, what elements do you try to maintain in your compositions other than the different styles of music that you've already added on there?
Wow, that's a good question. I really don't like to put a name attached to it. You understand? Because once you do that, then people will know you for that type of style, and it's going to be hard for you to branch out. You understand?
Yeah.
So it's like a gumbo to me, you know?
Sure.
Like, whatever comes to mind, I'll just do it.
Right. Yeah, you know, inspiration can come at any given time, man. You know, I personally feel we try our best not to box ourselves into a style. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as well as I do, man, as music producers, man, I mean, we can do one song for one artist and, you know, everybody wants that style from it just because it was hot on the last album. I mean, how do you separate yourself from that box and, you know, keeping it fresh where you can still maintain your own creative expression on all your projects?
Well, what I do a lot of different styles of music. Yeah. So when a client comes, I'll play him like five genres of music and I'll let them choose. You understand? If they ask me to do a song that sounded like this, I say, I can make a track that will sound like that. But then again, you're the one who's gonna sound like the last. That you're gonna sound like the previous artist, and you don't want that. You understand
right.
what I'm saying? So that's what I tell my artists, the people, my clients, the people I work with.
Now, keeping yourself, you know, as your own person in the lab, man, having that own identity in the studio and on your project, that's most important. You know, the last thing you want to do is sound like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I understand you want to keep it flavorful and keep it young and, you know, keep it commercial, what's out there, so you get radio play. But at
yep.
the same time, man, we still got to create that artist expression. I mean, we can keep it same, but also keep it different. You know, you want to keep it relatable. You don't want to, you know, just throw hot and cold every track that you got. I mean, people are kind of, you know, stuck to a certain style radio format, you know what I mean? So I understand
yeah.
that. But and like you say, man, just maintaining that creative expression, getting into other genres that you can expand your palette and, you know, keep those ideas fresh and keeping yourself inspired in the lab, definitely.
Yeah, but you know what's also the problem, too? us as musicians, because we studied the art. It's like when we might put too much into the track, and that's what might keep one musician from eating compared to the other one, who doesn't really know too much about music, and they're putting him on all the projects that's out there.
Yeah.
So we got to know how to balance, not put too much, and not leaving the track empty as well. You understand? It's like I said, it's a balance.
Yeah, definitely.
Because most listeners are not musically trained or inclined. So if you're putting too many chords that they won't understand, they're not going to go buy the music.
Right, definitely. Got to have that balance, man. You know, I just think that comes with time.
Yeah,
you know, I think, especially for me, man, I don't mind telling how I used to break tracks down. You know, when you got great skills, I was playing and tracking at about 13, 14. You got all these great skills and the speed is there for your runs and different chords, but... You know, man, I was all over the place when I was about 13 and 14 and tracking, just to really see what I could do as a keyboardist. But when it came down to actual songwriting, I started to play less.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
just
yeah.
Because there was no room. Man, that track was full, man. I had 14, 15 tracks going. But, you know, after a while, you start taking things away and really start building a structure. Really start listening to other tracks that are out there and kind of following that structure. It's like, man, they're not playing, you know, 10 chord progressions entire song and running solos, and you know, it's not a jam session. You know, so yeah, you know, building that I just think it takes time, and being around other guys, listening to other covers. I'm a huge fan of the covers, and really building that ear to mature level when you can actually start the art of songwriting and compositions. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the trick also is to listen to other producers who are already doing it. Then you kind of copy their styles, you know, like what I did when I first started making tracks. I used to listen to Babyface.
Yeah.
And then I started listening to Teddy Riley.
Oh, and there's my guy right there.
Then I started listening to Quincy Jones. Then I moved on to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Yeah.
And I've noticed they all had their own sound, and I took a bit of each of them and made it into my sound. You know, what I would do, like, I would take, like, a Babyface song and just break it down with all the chord progressions and just analyze his tracks. And that's how I started making my own tracks. You know, knowing what chord to put, when to stop, you know, when to stop adding, when to start making a bridge, you know, those type of elements.
Right. But you brought up a good point earlier, Steve, man. It's like, we studied the art of music. You know what I mean? When you study the art of music, man, that's where you really get into. It's like, man, when are they bringing these chords in? Sustain and release. I mean, how long are they sustaining the chords, and when are they releasing these chord progressions? You know what I mean? And when is the bridge coming? When is the hook coming? And that's, you know, like I said, man, studying that art of music, that's really where your ear builds up. And, you know, a lot of guys, I feel now, it's like, yeah, it takes time. It takes years to develop that, man. I mean, I just knew going in it was going to take a while to develop it. And, you know, I still remain a student of music, man, after all these years, just because music progresses and your ideas should progress along with it. And, you know, just being open and just keeping that learning curve as high as possible, man, so you can, you know, get yourself to the next level and never plateau as a musician.
Yep, you're right. You're right about that. And, you know, the first thing I started studying when I started making tracks, I would always ask myself, when do they know when it's time for the hook or when it's time for the verse?
Right.
The verses. And then I started counting all the bars. And most verses were 8 bars. And then the pre-hook was 8 bars. And then the hook was 8 bars. And then they would go back to the second verse. And I was like, wow, it's 8, 8, 8, 8. Or sometimes it could be 8 bars for the verse and a 4 bar pre. And then to the hook. And with Babyface, what he would do, he would do the 8 bar verse, 8 bar pre-hook, 8 bar hook, and then he would do a 4 bar break, and then back to the verse.
Oh yeah, yep. That's
you
the
know,
formula.
That's how, and I broke it down. I was like, wow, this is how you make tracks. This is the format. So if you know that, if you got the blueprint, then it's very easy to make a track.
I totally agree with you. You know, but I also got to ask you, man, as a composer, do you find yourself more focused writing in the studio with other lyricists and other musicians, or do you usually come up with the foundation of the track yourself and then present it to the group of players who are involved in the session?
Yeah, I like making the tracks by myself, you know, in my zone, you understand? Because that way I can concentrate. Because when there's too much noise or too many people talking, it's hard for me to create. Right. Sometimes if I'm put on the spot, I will do it. But sure. I'd rather be alone doing the track.
No, it's definitely, it makes sense, man. I'm one of those guys who I can go both ways, you know, because sometimes, you know, might have a lot of people in it, or you might be called at another studio with multiple people in the room. But, you know, having that concentration and zone by yourself really helps a lot when you're starting out. At least get me 30-40% of the music, and then I don't mind bringing it into a group of people. But yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Yep. Let me start it, man. Then we can, yeah, you know, and chat a little bit later and hang out. But yeah, I just want to at least give you an idea and just have that concentration on my own. No, I totally agree with you there.
Because us as composers, let's say we're working on a track, all right? And we might do a chord that might not sound good, but the person behind us might say, "Oh no, I don't like that chord." But you know, I'm just trying with the chords. Let me get it right, and then give me your opinion. You know, that's the thing about not liking having too many people in the room.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, you just going through the chords or going through the sounds. You know.
Oh, totally. Now, man, aside from being a music producer and a composer, Steve, you're a huge, huge recording engineer, man. You've done a lot of major projects in engineering and recording. Analog and DAW formats, man. I'm sure you worked on both formats. I mean, what's your personal preference at this point, and what are you currently tracking and recording on now?
Right now, I'm working on DAW, on the Pro Tools. I like both worlds.
Yeah.
It's like the digital world is much easier, it's much faster, but it's beautiful if you know about the analog world, because you can appreciate the digital world. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
But a lot of people that just started off with a DAW, they don't really know what it's like really engineering a whole song. But like me, for instance, I started on the 246 for the studio by Tascam,
mm-hmm,
and just working with only limited to four tracks, it made me work. It made me learn the machine inside out. So when I stepped to the Pro Tools, it was like a whole different world. It was like, wow, all the things I used to do that used to take me maybe 3 or 4 hours, I can do them in like maybe half an hour.
Right. You know? Oh yeah. No, DAW helped out, man. I like talking about the analog world. I come from an analog world also. I also started on a Tascam 8-track studio mixer. Had a built-in reel-to-reel.
Wow.
But what's nice about the analog world, and when you get these mixers, man, it's like you have to learn how to use EQ.
Yeah.
You know, you have to learn what your buses are. You know, your send, receives, your auxiliaries. I mean, these are basic tools and basic features that... In the analog world, it's a must, because all of our gear is external, man. We have hardware reverb units. Everything was hardware EQs, compressions, you know, there was nothing inside the box, man. You know, so I would have a rack mount of all these effects and preamps and, you know, to get that routed into your mixer and to make them speak to all of the channels without the feedback and bleeding through on different tracks. I mean, it's a learning curve. But like you said, man, by the time we got to the DAW world, I mean, it was cakewalk for us after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow. Yeah, I started off with how you call that sequencer again? It's called Voyager. You remember that?
Which one is
back it? Voyager. It came out in 94 for the IBM.
No, 94. I was already tracking. I was on Dr. T's. I was using a Commodore Amiga computer. I was on Dr. T's at the time, and then I crossed over to Steinberg later, but no.
Oh wow. Yeah, back then I was using the EPS 16 Plus by Insonic.
Oh yeah, I know that keyboard. Yes, sir.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah. Now, I'm a huge fan of playing covers, Steve, and I've noticed that you've tacked on a couple of covers yourself, new and old school, man. I mean, what are some of the other covers that you haven't had a chance to tackle on, but you really want to make it your own?
Yeah, the She's Out of My Life by Michael Jackson.
Oh,
I'd love to redo that. Which one again? Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder.
Mm.
know, there are a lot of songs I would love to redo. But recently I did The Motivation by Kelly Rowland featuring Little Wayne.
That was hot, man.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I've noticed that every rapper and every singer was coming out with their own version. And I was like, you know what? Let me do my version. Let me play the flute on it. And I did it, and I got some great reviews on it. And it was just nice to see that how people, you know, the listeners accepted it, you know?
Yeah.
They enjoyed it.
Now, for those that haven't heard it, man, I mean, his flute playing on there is totally remarkable. I mean, from your dynamics to the attack, Steve, the tone of it was just, man, it was just unbelievable. I really didn't know what to expect. But after, man, seriously, after hearing, I became a fan of it immediately. Seriously.
You know what's so crazy? A lot of people said, once they heard my remix, they're like, wow, I think the original is missing the flute.
Oh, yeah, man, that's the same thing I thought. They should really added that in there. They got to check it out, man.
Yeah. But I did tweeted it to Kelly Rowland, you know, on Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't know if she heard it or not, but, you know, I made sure that, I sent her the link.
There you go. You know, speaking of Twitter, man, I mean, self-promotion and marketing is a must these days for any up-and-coming musician and even the seasoned musicians that are out there, keeping their name on the radar. What steps do you feel that are effective to create a huge fan buzz? And also, as a writer-composer, you know, getting work in Hollywood, man. What are some of the things that you use to really market yourself, to keep yourself in the scene and to have work?
I use a lot of Facebook, you know, with all my fans. Every time I'm working on something, I'll just update, let them know what I'm working on. And also with Twitter, you know, the same thing. You know, every day I try to let my fans know what I'm working on. That way, you know, they become used to you, and they're aware about what you're working on. And that's the new route. You know, you just got to know how to promote yourself. You know, you don't really need a PR person. You know, you can do it all by yourself right now.
Yeah.
You say, so you just got to know how to build that communication, zone with all your fans.
Right. That's where it's at, though, man. I mean, honestly, for me, Steve, I've been waiting for this for years, man. You know, I was one of the guys complaining back in the 80s and 90s. It's like, man, there's really no outlet for independent musicians to really make it effective. You know what I mean? I wanted to be able to get my ideas and my music to the guys that really wanted to hear what it is I was doing. But, man, there was no internet in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
no,
man, what are you
no,
talking
man.
About, dude? You know, and, you know, the resources that we had was you either had to have a manager, record label, record deals. I mean, that's what we were all, you know, searching for these days. But now it's like, man, we have our own foundation. We can create our own buzz and create it so big where the labels will come to us. You know, and there's guys that are doing it successfully and really effective these days. And now there's no more excuses, man. It really falls back onto how hard are you willing to work and grind it out.
Yeah, and you got to take advantage of the internet. Like every day you should put at least 2 hours on the internet. I've met so many people on the internet, and now I'm working on all these people, like especially the music supervisors for MTV or independent films.
Yeah.
You know, their contacts are all over the internet. You just got to know what you're looking for.
Right.
You understand? It's like it's part of your daily work now.
It is. Got to stay on that internet grind, man.
Yeah, you got to stay up on it, because if you don't, somebody else will, and you are going to be missing out
right.
on the whole internet age.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
So, man, we're just now hitting 2012, Steve, man. What's on the musical agenda for this year?
Right now, I'm working on all the different shows on MTV. I'm putting my team together, you know, team of writers, so we can, you know, bombard all the labels, you know, with the new sound, with my new sound.
Yeah.
You know, just staying creative. Just building my empire, you understand?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just trying to be like the next Quincy Jones. The way Quincy Jones did it for us, that's what I want to do. I want to be the blueprint for the next generation. So every day it's a working process for me, you know?
Nice.
Just to stay up on the sounds, on who's coming up, which producer's doing it, You know, I got to be in tune with everything that's going on.
Yeah, we got to, man. I mean, this, you know, production is something else, man. But like saying, staying current, man, and, you know, creating that blueprint for the next guy that's going to follow. Yeah. You just like say Quincy Jones just, to me, he's the father of all producers. I mean, if it wasn't for Quincy, I really don't think production would be where it's at today.
You're right.
You know, he's really opened my eyes to things outside of production, music direction, scoring, you know, motion picture soundtrack. I mean, he's done it all. You know,
and branding also.
Yeah. Oh, and branding. Yeah. I mean, now he's got his AKG headphones out. I mean, that's where it's at. You know what I mean? So this guy is just, again, that blueprint, man. You can't go wrong following Mr. QJ. So.
Yeah. Speaking about AKG, I got endorsed by AKG during the summer.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congrats, man.
The PA22 microphone. You know, it's an amazing mic. It's an all-purpose microphone, and you can use it for all types of style of music.
Nice. Is it condensed?
Yes, it's a condenser microphone.
Nice.
Yep. So, you know, having your name attached to a brand, to a company like that, it puts you on a different level.
Oh, man, that separates you from everything, dude. That gives you that stamp of approval. It's like, man, I'm with AKG, man. You know, it's only AKG, man. No, nothing big, but, you know, only one of the biggest manufacturers out there. So, you know. No, man, that's just excellent, man.
Thank you. I'm just proud, you know, to having my name attached to that company.
Oh, huge, man. I use a lot of AKG products. I used their headphones back in the day. I had a chance to track on one of their older microphones also, and now they're, you know, come out with the new ones that you're endorsed by, and Quincy Jones' headphones. AKG makes great products, man. Can't go wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. AKG set the blueprint for the studio equipment.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure having you on my show, man. I would love to have you back and talk about your new musical endeavors, any projects that you're working on, and just to chop it up once again, man.
Oh, thank you very much. I would like to thank you for having me. You know, I've seen you've been doing a lot of great interviews with the other elite producers and composers. You know, I'm just happy to be part of that team now, part of that family.
Oh, yeah. I only talk to the best of them, man. So, yeah, you're definitely on that mark for sure, bro.
Thank you very much, you know.
Well, thanks, Steve, you have a safe 2012. To best of you and luck and your family and your music camp, man. Got to come back where we got to chop it up again.
Yes, thanks for having me again.
Sounds good, Steve. Well, you have a safe one, man. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, likewise.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And a big shout out and thank you to Steve Pajor for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Had a really great time talking to Steve, man. He's an excellent musician, really well-diversed. From his music ability as a flute player, his production ability, and his engineering ability. You know, it's just really no surprise to see companies like Yamaha and AKG endorsing him and really taking their trust in him and his expertise and product knowledge. For more information on Steve, you can hit him up on Twitter at Steve Pajot, and it's S-T-E-V-E Pajot, and Pajot is spelled P-A-G-E-O-T. Steve Pajot. And for more information on his credits, he's also on Independent Music Database at www.imdb.me/Steve Pajot. imdb.me/Steve Pajot. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spudtootight.com. www.spudtootight.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.